on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Wally.
Job Dean Fox again, this time he's in! At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll.
John to Hue.
Equaliser for Leighton Orient!
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying to do our best, to wear the vest, whatever challenge, whatever test. We're Leighton Orient from Etair, Leighton Orient from Etair.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Orient Hour. My name is Billy Herring, and I'm hoping Rich has put my mic up and it's all working. He's giving me a thumbs up, so it must be. We'll soon see. I'm joined in the studio today by Rich Priest. Rich, how are you?
Good, thank you, mate.
Feel a little stressed about all the buttons and everything you've got to do?
The converter while Andy's on holiday, yeah, exactly.
The button monkey today, so yeah. Gareth, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Billy. How are you, mate?
All good. And Terry Howard, Orient legend. How are you, Terry?
Very good, thank you. Good evening, everyone.
Have you recovered from New Year's Eve yet?
I'll say it's a bit like a bad dream. It was really a good dream that turned into a bad dream.
Oh, dear. Well, it's good to see you back on your feet anyway. Right, okay, so we've got a lot to talk about today. We've got a lot of pre-records as well. So we're going to hear later on from Richie Wellens. We're going to hear from Dave Victor as well. And, of course, our special favourite, Roper's Rant as well. But let's get straight into the Orient against Reading game of the weekend. Gareth, you went. What was the stadium like?
It was surprisingly good. I had it in my mind.
Surprisingly good?
Yeah, no, I'd never actually been before. And in my mind, it's going to be one of these soulless kind of out-of-town grounds. But it was actually better than that. There was a bit of atmosphere. And I think it's probably the annoyance of the Reading fans themselves added to that. But it's a bit better than I thought it was going to be. And now they've got a train station within 15 minutes walk. It's kind of easier to get to as well. So, yeah, much better than I thought it was going to be.
Were there any concerns for you about the game actually going ahead? Because, obviously, you know, their club's in turmoil at the moment. Let's be honest about it.
No, absolutely. And, yeah, I think we can all sympathise. You know, it's like we've all been through, you know, difficulties with owners, and we understand what different clubs have been through. So I think quite a bit of sympathy. I think from our point of view, we didn't want it to be called off because we've all spent the money and gone, etc. But I think even with that, you probably would have had some sympathy for the Reading fans if you had, you know, had some form of protest. But I think that part of it, the pitch invasion, has done its bit, hasn't it? They can't keep doing that because it won't get them any further. It's going to penalise the club, isn't it? So I think they're trying to think of different ways. There was a moment in the 16th minute, which is, you know, to show solidarity, the whole stadium was applauding, including the Orient fans. And then, of course, as soon as that was over, it all went against each other again. So,
yeah, did you talk to any Reading fans before the game at all?
I didn't. So I'm normally too nervous to even think about talking to other fans and what they expect. Yeah, so I spoke to a lot of Orient fans, but no Reading fans. But great sympathy for what they're going through. So you can only hope that a solution comes quickly and beneficial to them as well, because nobody wants to see a team like that going through that, do they?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, obviously, it's one of those weird things now, isn't it, within football, that Orient are always going to have solidarity with any club now going through difficulties now that they've been there. It pains me to say, but recently I've been talking to a Southend friend of mine, and I really feel for them. I really, really hope. I'm really glad about their takeover and stuff, you know. And I'm hoping to see them back in the league soon. And you know, I tried to get a cheeky bet on them the other day, I must admit, but there's no bookies that will take odds on Southend getting into the playoffs this year. Right, let's go back to the Orient, shall we? So we lined up with a 4-2-3-1 with Brin in goal, Galp, Eccles, Happy and Sweeney at the back, with Brown, El Mazzuni, 4-2, Archibald and Danache up front. Rich, I'm going to come to you now. Galbraith continuing at right back.
Yeah, I think was Saturday the match just after Tom James lost his dad, I think. So that makes perfect sense, really. I think you know, now that we know that Sanders is out, I'd like to see him come back in because I think he's the ideal person to fill that position. But I thought certainly against Bolton, I thought he did a really good job there. I think the first game or so he was there, it was one, you know, I hate seeing square pegs in round holes. So
finding his feet a little bit.
Yeah, and for a beginning, I thought, you know, because I quite like Jordan Brown can play there as well, but, you know, we've mentioned on this plenty of times that, we, you know, these players, you know, it's good to keep them in their main positions and they look good. You know, Brown looks good where he plays. Braith looks good in the middle when he plays. So for me, you know, I'm not a huge fan of doing that, but I understand the need to do it when something like this happens because obviously Rob Hunt's out as well. But yeah, he's been doing really well there. So I think I'd possibly like to see that change if Tom James is able to come back on Saturday. I think I'd like to see that change with Galbraith moving into that role that Sanders has been playing now. But yeah, more than happy to see him there the last few games. I mean, we've been on a good run, so I don't really think you can complain too much. I mean, I know Gareth will tell you, but I think Sweeney was given, especially in the first half, a bit of a rough ride on the left. You know, for me, he's still one of these players that he needs to play to get up to speed. Unfortunately, you have to have a few games. I mean, even Bolton, I did think he did well, but there was a couple of moments where you could see he hadn't played for a while, I think. But he's one of these players, he almost needs to be playing every minute of every game to be really effective. And the problem we've got then is if people like Rob Hunt do come back or James on that left-hand side, you know, what happens then? Because Sweeney, I think, really needs to be playing constantly to hit that level. And if he misses just the odd game or two, he seems to drop right down. I think that's possibly the reason why we haven't seen too much of him this season, because he wasn't getting in, and you know, and we don't have a reserve team now, so he's not getting any minutes at all, and it's just training it's based on. So but Galbraith at right back, I've been more than happy with that while he's been able to fit in there. He's looked good.
Terry, coming over to you, talking to you there, what's it like as a youngster in and out of the team, if you can remember that far back, mate, being in and out of the team, you know, maybe not starting as getting as many minutes as you like?
Difficult, no matter what age you are, you know. It's going back to his game against Bolton, he made a couple of good tackles, but they were tackles that if he was fully fit, he'd have got them all comfortably.
If he was in the right position,
he
in the
made
first
a great
place.
Last-ditch tackle. Everyone sort of raised, oh. But he, is, as Rich just said, if he was 100% fully fit, match fit, I think he'd have got there a bit more comfortable. You know, he was labouring a little bit. You could see he didn't have a bad game, but I think that's as Richard said, he needs probably another 2-3 games to be really up to speed, you know. And unfortunately, at fullback, as a well know, you get a few wickets out there, and if you're not fully on your game, you'll get found out.
And you know, moving forward, you know, see, he got taken off at half time. Is that going to damage his confidence, do you think? Or do you think now, you know, like, do you think he'll be back on the bench and Tom James starts at the weekend?
I would imagine that Tom will come in and Galbraith will go into midfield. That would seem, like the same as we've alluded to, that would seem a natural thing to do. It will affect his confidence a little bit because he for me, when I watch him play, he looks like he doesn't have a lot of confidence. You see him, and I know the manager's sort of, you know, not just him, but the manager's been in his ear a little bit, and it seems to affect him, you know. He looks a confidence player. So, listen, football, it's all about any sport, any talk, it's about character. And if he's not in the team, he's got to be strong and see if he can find his way back in. But, so he's done okay. But as I say, it's hard because he needs the minutes, he needs the game time, but whether he gets it or not is another matter.
I think from a fan's point of view, it was very evident because we were behind the goal and obviously tackling the front end in the first half. And Reading were exploiting the space behind Sweeney. So it wasn't him playing badly. His natural game is to be more forward than perhaps Tom James or Rob Hunt. And it left a big space and they were getting into it fairly easily, which was causing us all sorts of problems, really. So.
Well, obviously on that side, Dan Happy was playing that side. And obviously speed is not his greatest attribute. So sometimes he could get away with it, Sweeney, if you've got a really quick centre-up that might make up the ground. But obviously, Dan, that's not Dan's strength, as I said.
But is that where you need the more senior players like Dan to step up, or Omar Beckles, who's playing centre-half as well, to step up and say to him, that just hold for 5 minutes, you know? Or should he be making that decision himself once he sees that ball going behind him? He's got to take himself, actually. I need to stop going forward and I need to sit back a little bit. Terry, coming over to you.
Well, it goes back to a conversation we've had before about decision making on the pitch by players. We say sometimes they don't seem to realise or to do in that situation. They just said, I think it's a combination of both. But I think he's got to realise, maybe I should be a bit more sort of conservative, right? But the senior player should say, right, let's just sit tight, let's just get our shape, let's cover him, get yourself him out. Obviously, that maybe was not happening at the weekend. it's a combination of both.
Yeah. Another good game for Jones. He's proven a real threat. He seems to have turned our season around.
It's funny, actually, because I was thinking recently that, you know, I can't remember the last time we had a forward, I think, that's... I felt Percy's this effective. I mean, I know we've had forwards that have scored us goals. We didn't really have that last year, but, you know, we've had Bond, Jay Simpson, who have scored goals for us. But for me, they you know, I've never really looked at either of those, even though they were scoring 20 goals, and thought, you know, if he's out, we're in trouble, which we'll touch on later, maybe. But, you know, he has made that much difference. I mean, that Bolton game, for instance, you know, he was up against a big old fellow at the back there, that Santos.
I thought he was the best centre-half we've
seen. Yeah, but
season,
that was... Because I did think he's just going to get bullied out of this. But I thought, you know, the pair of them gave it so well.
And it was a great battle to watch.
Yeah, and I have to be honest, when he was here and we started putting him up front, I was probably... Because I remember him tearing us a new one at Crewe from the left or the right, and I thought, oh, this is another thing here. We've got Shaq fold out on the right, we've got, you know, and I thought we need to switch things around. But, it, you know, it's, both of them are probably completely wrong there, because Ford's looking superb, I think, on that right hand side. And I can't believe how well Dan's looking up front, I have to be honest.
It was great going back to that. It was like an old school battle, weren't it?
Yeah.
You don't see that a lot now.
No,
yeah.
And it was really good to watch. And what was fantastic from Dan's point of view was, I think we only really got away from him once.
Yeah.
But that was enough. That's the difference he's brought to the team.
Yeah.
He battled and listen, he was a good centre-half. You know, he was a big powerhouse, he was quick. But Dan got away once, and that's what the best strikers do.
And it's the finishing as well, because, I mean, we've seen he can finish with his head, we've seen he can finish with both feet, you know. It's not, you know, I know it's not, he's got down the penalty as well, so he showed us just in four or five goals already what he can do. And, you know, it's, you know, and I think but if he's, who comes in for him again, because I don't think we've got anyone as effective. I mean, Joe Pigger is a completely different up front if he plays.
I wonder what you were going to say there.
No, but you know, it's just the whole team would almost change, because, you know, can you imagine Joe Pigott against that centre back of Bolton? I mean, the game would have just been. I don't think we've got another player that could have finished that quite like Dan did, actually, as well, because it wasn't actually an easy goal. You know, I noticed yesterday the club put online the goal of the month, and a lot of people saying, well, it's got to be Shaq Fawkes, but I actually thought that finish against Bolton, you know, because he actually showed the pace to get away from the guy there, and to, like, wrong foot the keeper as well. I just thought it was a great finish, so I actually voted for that one. But, you know, I don't think we would have had many other players that could have done that, actually. But yeah, I mean, I just think we're all worried, weren't we? Jordan Graham went out, and we were in a bad rut when he came in. I did think, like, this guy's going to come in here, we're floundering as a team, we're getting dragged lower here. And, you know, I didn't think he would make as much difference. That's the best way I can say. I didn't think he would have so much of a positive effect as he has. He's changed our season completely when he's come in, and we're not that far off being safe, which is all I really care about now, to be honest.
I think that, just as you kind of said there, Shaq Ford's form's improved since Dan's come into the side. He looks a lot more... I mean, listen, going back to, like, saying about swinging the game time, as Shaq Ford has played... got a lot of game time under his belt, he looks fitter now, he looks a bit stronger, his confidence is up. But being down there with him, I think, has made a massive difference to him and other players as well, because they can...
Well, Theo looks better, doesn't he, as well?
Theo, the midfield, when you've got someone you can trust, like when you're playing centre-half, if you trust the goalkeeper, it makes your life a lot easier. If you've got a centre-forward, you can trust the ball goes up his sticks, you can make your runs off of it. When the ball is going up, not sticking, come back, you lose confidence in it. And as I say, it's his personal game, he's affected the whole team, I think.
Yeah.
But also, when you've got someone with his pace, the defence has to drop off 5 yards, which gives everyone else more space to play in. I mean, when I interviewed Dan before Christmas, like, because he was coming back into training, I made the comparison with Kevin Campbell. And I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I don't think that is, you know...
There's people laughing at the time, weren't there?
Wasn't there, Josh?
Kevin Campbell-esque, wasn't it? Strength, power... Yeah. Pace and finish, you know, and Kevin was all about it. You know, he'd have loved playing against that centre half. He'd have had a go as well, you know. So.
Now, you mentioned Sweeney coming off at half time at the weekend. He wasn't the only player that got to half time, so he was also Tyrie as well. And Gareth, what did you make?
For me, it was, I think, compared to the three games we'd won before against Reading. Sanders in the number 10, so Rule was given the role there, and I'm not a fan of him though. I really not. I don't think he has the craft, the guile, and the skill.
Different types of player, aren't they?
For me, he'll always be you know, a number 10 who's looking to get to goal. And he's good at scoring goals. Like we've said this many, many times before, he does score goals. I mean, I won't tell you my description that I used at the ground. I mean, he can't do very much else, but he does score goals.
I think that's a bit harsh.
Yeah,
what I will say about Russ Stewart
I was frustrated in the
half, Bill. Yeah. It's probably why I said it. Yeah,
what I will say is, though, no one can fault his work ethic. One thing he will give you, he will run from first minute to 90th minute.
He did put a cross in for the penalty as well, actually. Yeah. It's a good cross, actually, yeah.
But I think that's what affected the team. Whether Sanders, Galbraith, or whoever it is in that 10 role, I think that's where we were, because we've got Adjei pushing forward. There's more space in that room, and we need somebody who can thread the ball through and can put other players in. And Rule just... So perhaps I overreacted, but it was more of frustration and anger as much as anything else. But yeah, I think that's probably why he was taken off, because it wasn't working, you know, the way it had been in the previous three games, essentially, sir.
It's interesting because, Rich, I know me and you had this conversation before about not liking Sanders in the 10. We preferred him playing deeper, and now Sanders not in the 10. We're missing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, right? Because, yeah, we did say the same, because the best game I saw him play was when he played it there. You know, the only excuse I can give it myself is that when he came and played that, well, first of all, he wasn't fit, but now he's getting fitness. I think the only worry, it does seem to be, you know, a bit like we've got Adam Thompson now, one of these players that there's always seems to be an injury lurking at the moment. I mean, I don't know whether it's the same as, you know, like the or Jordan Graham, but they've never really had that many injuries until they joined us. And whether Sanders, I don't really know his background. I'm sure that when we got him, actually, a few Lincoln fans did say when he's fit, he's good, but that's not very often kind of thing. But, you know, fortunately, I think it's a hamstring, actually, they've said he's got, which, you know, I think the article online from Richie said it was quite a bad one. So I don't know, what is that, a couple of months at least, something like that.
A bad hamstring, you could be looking up to, well, a really
could
bad
be out for the season, yeah.
Could be up to 4 months.
Yeah, so, you know, the article I read just said it was a bad one, so... Yeah, I mean, it's a shame if it is something like that, because he was just coming into the team, just starting to show his fitness, and, you know, it feels like, you know, one forward, a couple of steps back at the moment, occasionally. But, you know, I'm more confident in the fact that we're on a good run, so confidence is in the team, and we're that much closer to, I think, what's the safety net now, like 50 points or something like that for staying up, so we're only 11 points off that, so at the moment, if we keep picking fingers, I'll just be waiting until we get to about 55, and that'll do me for the season by then.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, we were starting to look over our shoulder a little bit. Four games make such a difference, you know?
Yeah, I think we're 10 off the playoffs and 12 off relegation, something like that, so, yeah.
Which is probably where we should be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Interestingly, our second signing of the window, should I say. I forget about Brandon Cooks, because we already had him here. But our second signing of the window, Ollie O'Neill, made his debut. Gareth, what did you make of Ollie's impact?
He looked really lively, to be honest. He looks more like a proper winger. You know, and perhaps what we're saying about Shaq Ford, he's a kind of right-sided forward who plays a bit wide but isn't properly a winger. Jordan Graham, quite clearly, is a winger, and we can talk about where Archibald plays and whether he's actually a winger. He looked very lively, and he went straight away to take the corners, which I found interesting, since he only arrived a couple of days previously, and you know, so that shows real confidence for a young lad to kind of say, well, I'll take him.
The bar isn't that high in our set pieces this season. I don't think he's under too much pressure.
Terry, I'm talking about the confidence to put his hand up, let alone, yeah, yourself to stick a decent one in comparison.
I mean, he was taking corners with the outside of his boot as well, is that correct? A la Laurie Cunningham?
Yeah, apparently so, yeah. So, I mean, they actually seemed to, like, arrive at the goal belt and, you know, create a bit of havoc in the defence as well. Unusual for us, really, isn't it? So.
We've been very facetious tonight, aren't we, you know? Alright, well, we've conceded our first goal of 2024, and I'll be honest, it was disappointing the way it went in. I mean, you know, I could have accepted it if it was an absolute screamer. You say, okay, we've had 4 points, we've done well, right? But, you know, Terry, I mean, what do you make of it? How's the defence going to feel after playing so well for so many games? All of a sudden, you concede one like that.
They're obviously going to be disappointed with it. I mean, look, let's be honest. During that run, we've enjoyed a little bit of luck along the way, which you have to have. We've had some great defending. Some great goalkeeping. I mean, the game against Bolton springs to mind for them.
The miss.
Exactly. The header is a net, you know, that's got to be in the back of the net. And then the one-on-one that Solbrin saved just after we scored. So we've got, you know, we'll have to take that one on the chin. By and large, I don't think we'll get too down about it, but obviously that's not something we want to creep in. with regard, I mean, the thing is, we're still not scoring loads of goals. Obviously, the three at Portsmouth was great, but we're not exactly free scoring. So it's important that the boys keep it tight. I think it's important that the two centre-halves, who seem to have, you know, formed a nice partnership with that sort of central area, that core of our team.
Yeah, yeah, the four in there.
Yeah, there's a good core, that, and we talked about partnerships and understandings, and that to me looks, we look quite comfortable in there at the moment. So they mustn't beat himself up too much, but you mustn't let, you know, that sort of sloppiness creep into our play, which I'm sure Richie's talked about with them.
They did miss a sitter, I think, just before that, actually, didn't they? Right before the goal. It was kind of not too dissimilar from the Bolton one, you know, where they, it was just where they should have done, you know, when it's gone in, it was, you thought, that's it. But, so, you know, but yeah, you're right. It was just like one of these scrambled messes in the air that just went through some legs, and, you know, it's disappointing, but it was going to happen at some point, I suppose, wasn't it? So, but yeah, I mean, a point, you know, it's a way to read. I mean, because, you know, personally for me, actually, I thought they were the worst team I've seen this season at home. I thought they were dreadful when we played them earlier in the season.
Yeah.
But they've picked up a lot, you know, their results, that the teams that they've got results against, that they have picked up a lot. So it wasn't going to be an easy place to go, really. I mean, it's just a shame with the form that we're on and the teams, you know, you could scratch off Charlton, Bolton, Portsmouth, Reading, and beat those as well. But I think that
with that, because we've been on such a good run, it seems like a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A month ago, we said, I mean, I've got to be honest, before the game, I would be happy to take a point at Reading.
They're
on a decent run of form. They're a better side than when we played them earlier this season. So it's not, but I think because, I mean, if we're looking at getting into the playoff area, it's a game we should have needed to have won. If you're looking at it from the other point, we just said, keeping that little buffer, keep our run going, keeps away from the relegation zone, then a point was fine, you know.
I mean, listen, when your home games draw your away games, you know, you're going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season, and that's the thing, isn't it? So, all right, let's hear from Richie Wellens then and see what Richie had to say about the game.
Richie, thanks for joining us. Remain unbeaten in the new year. Are you satisfied with the point this afternoon?
I think you're going to go either way. I thought 20 minutes, they were very good. We started really poorly. A lot of their full-backs to get out, whether it be wide or whether it be inside the pitch, and it caused us one or two problems, and we were lucky for the one. And I think as soon as they equalised, we made a couple of changes in terms of tactical stuff, and then I think we dominated most of the game, definitely in possession, and definitely with, you know, playing around there, but especially second half. But they're a threat. Now, everybody looks at the league table, and they've got... Who's a very good player at this level, leans in, is a problem, and then they've got a split pitch. They've got Lewis Wing in midfield. If you step off him and allow him to spray the ball about, he can find passes. And they've got a centre half that's just got to move to the Premier League, and they've loaned him back. So they have a lot of talented players. But I thought in periods we dominated. I don't think they really they had transitional moments where they dominated us. But I think in terms of calmness, in terms of position, I think we dominated the game. But could have gone either way. Probably should have lost it.
I'm sure that you'll be disappointed to concede from a set piece.
How many times do you think we've shown that corner? Smith makes a run off the keeper, and he flicks things on, and it's dangerous. Difficult for the zone man, the front post face man. You've got to be more aggressive in terms of who's marking him. Got to be more aggressive and get your arms out and not allowing the freedom. You know, because when you run blindside of people, it's very difficult to mark. So it's a good corner they've got. I came here on Tuesday and he nearly got away with it two or three times against Derby. So, listen, if you're going to concede a goal, his first one is six, then ideally we'd like it to be a worldie, or they've opened us up, or something like to be a set plays a little bit frustrating.
Talking of set plays, down the drive from the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about his run-up. Seeing that, the old... take him on the 90th minute. By the time he strikes it, he's 90th. I mean, he scores nothing. No, at least I've seen him take him for crew. He actually took four for them, missed them all in training. Listen, he's got a good vein of form. He looks like he's real, real confident. And with Piggott and with Moncur out of the team, and he's the go-to guy.
Is he OK? You seem to have picked up a knock at the end.
No, you're going to ask me about Max Sanders in a minute. And what it is, these two guys have played for teams that when they lose the ball, they retreat, they sit in, they're passive. and they don't ask them to sprint, they don't ask them to press up, to cover big distances, and we're asking it now of them, and the body, Dan has obviously had a long time out, so he's coming into it fresh, at a moment Max's body just can't take it, so he's got a slight, he'll only be another week, slight hamstring, obviously why we brought him off against Bolton, and it's a big loss. Ideally, we've had a real good run of form, we want to play midfield, three midfield players in there. Solly's been chomping it a bit. We know that Solly is a threat running from the 10, and we thought that could have caused problems, but it never really came to fruition. I think when we got Pratt on second half and we had three out and out midfield players in there, I thought we looked more strong, more dominant in duels, and that allowed us to have more possession.
Ollie O'Neill is the wide man you wanted. He came close, didn't he, to making a real impact?
I thought you can see straight away, kind of. You can see that he's got a talent. He can go on the outside, he can come on the inside. He's got a bit of pace. Again, what I really like about him is in duels, he can press, he's very strong for his age, robust, and obviously then he's got the quality to go with it. So I think our supporters were quite excited at the 20-minute cameo that he's shown us, and also it gives us options from the bench. When you bring in Monks and when you bring in Pigs and when you bring Ollie on, it gives us options. Things are getting really strong. If anybody was going to win it, it would have been us, but obviously they're still a threat on the counter.
We don't often see you make a double change at the break.
First half performance, I want, you know, they're playing with one striker, and if you play with one striker, there's no excuse for them to switch the ball and allow their winger to control the ball and face forwards. No, and the 11 was causing too many problems in the first half. Obviously, I wasn't happy with our midfield three, the way it was functioning. So, rather than wait, I could have made it earlier. Rather than wait, and I think it had time to do it. And I think, like you say, we was a lot better after the break.
Can I ask about your own situation now? Will you be in the Temple area, do you think, for the next match?
Really frustrating, isn't it? So a guy's about to throw a ball down the line 15 yards away from it, from its original position. I slightly put my arm up to stop him, and I get sent off. And James Sweeney today is taking a throw-in from 2 yards from a wrong place. He throws it, and you know what? Referee gives it the other way. And I think he was on the verge of booking Sweeney as well. That's another reason why we substituted Sweeney. But there's no consistency there. One's 15 yards, and then when I get sent off, it's not like the referee clamped down on it. Randall Williams was still doing a long jump before he took the throw-in. But no, I've pleaded guilty to it. I've learnt my lesson last time. You cannot win. And rather than pay an extra 500 quid or an extra grand and probably get an extra game on top, it delayed his restart of the game. I understand the rules. There's another charge against me, which is staying in view of the pitch, which I had no idea that was a rule. I thought you could go upstairs in the stand and still watch the game. The game view now is new to me. The rules. They said that we've sent you a letter out. If it's a new rule, I've never received the letter. And I don't think a lot of managers would know. I thought they still think we're in the box or whoever it may be and watch the game. So I've admitted both charges, but I think for mitigating circumstances in the second one, I hope they show a little bit of leniency.
Changing the subject, over 2,000 enjoyed the performance, it seemed.
Class today, very good, spurred us on, and it's been a long month. You know, when you get that Christmas period and you've got the end of January, it's a long month. We've got a week's rest now and we can go again in February. It's going to be another demanding month. But I think the last 20 minutes, when you see our energy is being renewed, it's because of the supporters. You know, he was edging us on to get the winner. Unfortunately, we didn't, but they played their part. I thought their performance was superb.
The window is still open. Is there any chance of players leaving?
It's a really difficult one because he's been brilliant for me over a period of time, and we were getting phone calls for certain players, but it's only got to be right for the player. One of our players has got 6 months left on his contract and another club comes in and offers him 2.5 years, then for their own sake and their own financial support of the family, then I'm willing to. That offer's not been made for one of our players, it was, but then it was pulled, which, to be honest, I'm happy about the fact that we've given permission, the fact it was all agreed and looked like it. Then to change the goalpost was a little bit frustrating, but I'm not in a rush to get anybody out. I would like one more attacking player coming in through the door, but I'm not in a rush to get anyone out. If you give me this squad now from now to the end of the season, then I think, because again, I'm very reflective of what's gone on in the past, We start the season at 1.4. Then we've got another week to win. And then we're not playing. And then we have the link to go through. And we have to recover from a tragedy that's happened to the club. And then when we played the Lincoln, we played, our form is poor, and we have to recover from that. We have to wait for Dan Agi to get up to speed. Max, and so a lot has gone on. And now that we've got the full, I know Max was missing today, but now we've got more or less a full complement of players, our form has really, really picked up. So we have to be not trigger happy in terms of getting players out, getting players in, because if we continue this momentum, the spirit in the group has always been good. If we continue this momentum and point return the next 12 games, then let's see where we are. So I'm not in a rush to get anyone out, but like I say, if it's an offer from a club there, our player wants to explore, then I'm open to that as well.
Thanks, Richie. Right, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Richie Wellens there. And let's hear from Dave Victor, Victor's view.
Saturday's match was competitive and enjoyable. It generated a good atmosphere. Supporters of the O's and the Royals united. But it was soured with the racial abuse that followed. The response from Reading, prompt and positive, but we know that this is not an isolated incident. Omar Beckles is a leader on and off the pitch. As chair of the Professional Football Association, he made his and the players he represents position clear, following those sickening gestures directed at Coventry's Casey Palmer at Hillsborough early in the month. The late Norwich defender stated that his members want to see real, consistent and significant consequences for racial abuse, both for the individuals responsible and for the clubs who failed to get to grips with the issue within their stadiums. Let's hope that the consequences that Omar has called for are significant and effective in support of Dan Ajayi. On the pitch, Omar again a tower of strength, leading by example. His partnership with Dan Happy at the heart of a defence that has only conceded one goal in over 600 minutes of football. It could and should have been avoided, even though it was. Dan Ajayi's spot kick was well taken, but with a style that divides opinion. It reflects the confidence and swagger of a striker who's made such an impact to the O's attack. The faithful will never grow tired of seeing those clever and well-rehearsed celebrations. Over 2,000 at Reading, and they were magnificent. It's unusual for Richie Wellens to make a double switch at the break, but it was effective, and enormous credit has to be given to Tom James for his courage and professionalism under such difficult personal circumstances. And it was good to see Ollie O'Neill get his opportunity. The young Irish winger came close to scoring on his debut. Let's hope that we'll see more of Dan's celebrations when Carlisle return to Brisbane Road at the weekend. Paul Simpson's side need to improve on a dreadful recent record against the O's in the last four, including two victories this season. Walter scored the winner when they collected maximum points in Cumbria in October. The O's marksman also on target in the cup. Piggott and Dwyer scoring the others in the 10. Carlisle have definitely strengthened their squad in January. Winger Jack Diamond looking to relaunch his career, having joined on loan from Sunderland. The signing of former Fleetwood captain Josh Bellis. Competition for the number one spot has increased with Harry Lewis moving from Bradford City. Midfielder Harrison Neal has signed from Sheffield United. Defender John Guion from Crystal Palace. The Cumbrians' first signing of the window, a good one. Striker Luke Armstrong joining from Harrogate Town. But after Bolton inflicted a fourth straight defeat on Saturday, Carlisle are now 10 points from safe, and they've played three games in Port Vale. They will be determined and need to stage an upset at the weekend. The faithful will be hoping to see Lake Norwich extend their impressive unbeaten run. Richie Wellens' men are second in the form table behind Bolton. United's last victory came on New Year's in Port Vale. And we travel to the Potteries on Tuesday for a rearranged game against the Valiants. Andy Crosby's side have only won one and lost three of the last six. The last two games between these teams at Vale Park have been close and high-scoring affairs. Tuesday night's could be another fascinating and exciting encounter.
And thank you very much to Dave Victor there. Now, one thing that we do need to mention, obviously, is the unsavoury incident that happened at the end of the game. After the Norwich game, and that is the racial abuse that Dan Ajayi was subjected to on X. It's disgusting. There's no place for it in a game. We all stand with you, Dan, as the Orient tweet says, you know, and we hope that you're okay after that. Terry, I'm going to come to you with this one, because it was you were playing a totally different era, you know, and you ever witnessed anything like that when you were playing or anything? And what's it like being in the dressing room when something like that happens to one of your own?
I'm just trying to cast my mind back. Obviously we didn't have social media back then.
Sure, yeah.
If you got abuse, it would have been from on the day live and you could hear it. I think, not Ori, but the worst one I ever come across was Paul Canneville. Paul Canneville, obviously the first black player to play for Chelsea. And what I witnessed that day, it was sickening. We were playing Newport in a friendly. We would go to, it was even a pre-season friendly, so what Chelsea would do, we'd go to West Wales, Aberystwyth, all the players went and trained for the week. On the way back to London on the Saturday, the first team would play Newport. And at that time, Chelsea had been heavily infiltrated by the National Front, you know. And I was sitting in the stand, and I was sitting with Keith Jones and Robin Boss and Keith Dublin, who are all black boys. And they were only about 15, 20 yards away, and the filth that was coming out of their mouth, as I say, and I'm sitting there, and I'm shocked, I'm embarrassed. You don't know what to do. What do you do? You can't really go and confront them. You know, have we come much further in the sort of 30 odd years since? Not as far as we should have done. We've seen, you know, directives on this. We've seen. I still can't see in this day and age why they've got accounts with in social media.
Yeah.
Anything on there? Surely, the authority should have the power to come shut them down.
Yeah.
No. I don't see any other way around it, because it's still going on. We're never going to get rid of racism totally. Doesn't mean we haven't got to do our best to stop it. And so we've made some strides, but as much as we should have done. I'm sure that there were times when Kenny Acheampong or Ricky Otto were called names, but I can't ever recall Rick or Kenny actually saying it. It's been around. Unfortunately, we'll always be around, but I think we've got to be a bit stronger with it, surely.
Yeah, well said, Tay. Well said. What I will say is, well played to those Reading fans who have all come out en masse and condemned what's happened, and the club itself has made statements to say that, you know, if they find the individual, then we will be banned permanently from the game. So well done to them. Anyway, right, let's move on. I've got my little rant. Let's hear from Matt Roper now, from Roper's Rant.
Welcome back to another Roper's Rant, and here comes a good one. Settle down with the Horlicks, pin back the ears. You might want to turn your volume down and get ready. Transfer deadline day. Oh, God, don't get me started. I absolutely detest the time of the year and the actual day itself. Have you ever seen such a load of hyperbole over nothing? It's a circus created for the media and for very sad supporters to wrap it up. Whatever happened to the days of Orange footballs in the snow, the big match with Brian Moore, and not having to sit through endless boring reporters standing outside a training ground in the dark, when any one of us with half a brain know there's actually no one in the building behind them? Let's face it, with the price of blooming electricity these days, if the lights are on in the training ground behind said reporter, and they're there for 3 hours, they likely can't afford to buy anyone at that point anyway. At the top table, you now see clubs even playing as the clock ticks down. How on earth can we be expected to believe that deals are being done when the manager who trains and picks the team is in the dugout? Give it a couple of years, we'll see Sky and Amazon having live interviews with managers halfway through the first half, asking for his reaction about the new foreign import that's just walked in the door. Everybody knows, anyway, that the Orient were the forerunners with regards to amazing transfers. In 1925, striker Albert Pate moved to Manchester United for £2,000. Nothing stunning in that, you say? No? Well, it is when you find out that the first offer, the night before, of £1,000, had the O's thinking over a certain transfer. Pate travelled up on the train that day with the Orient team and was actually sitting in the dressing room at 2 o'clock in an Orient shirt just before United up their offer to 2,000, waiting for a wire to come through from the Football League. He actually changed dressing rooms and shirts, and the audacity to score the third in a 4-2 win for the Red Devils against the O's. Now, what a transfer story! For one, the O's leading the field yet again. The Wolves moved twice in this window to firstly bring back Brandon Cooper and now Ollie O'Neill, a young and exciting prospect from Fulham, who featured for a short while at Reading. His stats at under 21 level, including captaincy of the South West London outfit, are indeed interesting, and we wish him well in East London. Back to ranting, and this year the deadline day has moved to the 1st of February. Personally, I can't wait till they've moved it forward another couple of months to April the 1st, because that's what we're dealing with here. In the run-up to the actual deadline, we also have tons of absolutely awful social media accounts purporting to be in the know. Yet the account holder is likely a bored 17-year-old kid who's taken a break from playing Fortnite and is being shouted at by his mum when he doesn't come down for dinner because he's finishing a tweet or Facebook entry that the O's are interested in a striker from the Championship that already has 16 goals this season. Come on, for crying out loud. Make it half believable. In the summer, I tracked various transfer rumours from these types of accounts and O's fans themselves. 20 run rumours I looked at, and guess how many turned out to be correct? Two. Picked up on the day of the transfer, approximately an hour before it was made official. Groundbreaking rumour and journalism? Not here. So will we indulge ourselves in this farce any further? We are, of course, always open to fresh blood, but as Matt Porter said on the show last week, we are now attempting to make far more targeted signings that are the right fit and that the prospects are right, and that we won't be signing players such as Frank Noble and George Ray, who in his words were sticking plasters. Great to hear, although if Noble was a sticking plaster, then I think he'd rather lose the leg and bleed to death. There have been rumours over Drinnen attempting to play Scottish football in Carlisle. Tomo going to anyone that would take him. That's no disrespect to Tomo. Von Kerr finding himself a local club to play his trade at, and Pickett becoming a Womble of Wimbledon. Forgetting the actual clubs, I think most of these are reasonable common sense assumptions, and it's almost certain that at least two of these won't be here next season as we rebuild in year two of the 3-year plan set by the board. Right, let's deal with Saturday. Good result in my opinion. We could have won it, they could have nicked it, but a draw was about the right result, and we respect the point on the road, especially when you bear in mind the previous two results and our overall record in January. Reading are actually far better than their league position suggests, but as we know only too well here in East London, it's highly likely that the off-the-field stuff is dragging them down on the pitch. Carlisle this week, it's no given. We'll have to be professional as usual if we want to get status quo playing over the Tannoy come 5-5. For my money, it would likely be 2 points drop if we failed to win, but keeping an unbeaten run is important. It builds confidence, just as it did last season, putting together little runs of 6 and 8 games without defeat. We have a busy old February coming up, and we want to be putting on our best Elton John impression come the end of it. See you Saturday, and up the mighty O's.
Thank you, Matt. Right, okay. And then we're going to talk about the transfer window. Now, I had an argument at the start of the season, with some of the shit's very near to me, because Martin Ling was terrible. Martin Ling was terrible, and our transfer was awful. Stevie had been amazing, so had Northampton's, we were getting rejected, blah, 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 blah. All right. I think we should put that to bed a little bit, you know. When we get the players on the pitch that we actually signed, we can all agree that actually it was pretty good. Not every signing is right now, I think that's pretty odd. But let's obviously the two signings are Brandon Cooper, I think we could all be a fairly solid signing if control his temperament. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think up until he lost his head in, because I actually thought him and Solbrin were two players up to a point of the season so far. I did feel like he really let himself and the team down, especially that the Derby sending off, which I thought was terrible. But I wasn't displeased when we got him back. I think Richie said it himself, you know, I don't want to leave ourselves in a position next year where we've literally just got Omar Beckles, I think it is, as our only defence. You know, Adam Thompson's up, Ed Turns is on loan, Dan, we don't know if he can stay. So he said, we could have gone into next season with just one defender on our books. I didn't want to do that to us. So, you know, we know what Brandon's about. He's at a good age. He's when he was playing, he looked good at some games as well. So I think it kind of, you know, I don't imagine the fee was, well, I don't think there even probably was one. I think it's based on appearances and this kind of thing, sell-ons and stuff. So it was, I think it was almost one of those no-brainers, really, that we could get him in. And I don't imagine he's on huge money, so he's probably not made a massive dent in the budget either. So, I think it's a good signing. And just to go on what you said at the start there, if you actually looked at the signings of the four promoted teams that went up, I actually wouldn't change any of our signings for the other four. I mean, I know Stevenage are where they are, and I do think they're probably a close second to us. I think, you know, they haven't got any players of the league, so you know, they've made
or
good solid.
Galbraith.
Yeah, exactly. No, well, they've got sort of untried, you know, good sort of young but again, like when you mentioned about Ollie O'Neill, I like the stance we're taking there, as in, you know, these highly rated youngsters. Whenever we sign a player, the first check the reaction to the opposition players we've signed him from the team. And you know, a lot of Fulham fans were like, I wish we'd have given him more of a chance. And, you know, whenever I've seen him, he's looked good. And, you know, a lot of fans of the Irish youth team as well were on there saying, you know, this is, whenever I've seen him for the Ireland under whatever, he's looked really good. So I kind of like the way we're doing it. Sort of in a similar kind of way without the fees of the Peterborough and Brentford models, which I've always admired, really, and are kind of, I think, proven to work a lot of the time as well.
Gareth, coming over to you about Cooper.
Cooper, I actually think the ill discipline's overplayed a little bit, because he's only actually got two red cards in that time. One of them was Gillingham in the Pizza Cup, which, you know, it was an interesting refereeing performance, wasn't it? And it was only the Pizza Cup, so why are we really that concerned? I think the Derby one was, yeah, a rush of blood to the head, but, you know, I'm only a fan, but... How many times have we seen defenders lose it once and do something stupid? You know, that happens. Midfielders do the same, isn't it? You know, do you want them to be nice? Do you want them to be nice and welcoming? Do you want them... Yeah, obviously keep it under control, but you don't necessarily want them to apologise to the opposition, do you? Rather than impose themselves on it. So I can accept it as long as he reins it in. I don't think we want to see any more stupid red cards, do we? But it's a bit overplayed for me, I think. So.
Terry? Overplayed for you, or
listen, you don't want to take the aggression out of him as a defender, especially a centre half. You've got to have that. What I would hope he did was maybe look at the Bolton centre half, the big lad. Now, he was aggressive, but he was controlled.
Yeah,
and that's what he's got to get in his game, and that will come with games and maturity, hopefully. But as Gareth just said, rein it in a little bit. You can still be physical, you can still put yourself about, but you've got to be a bit cuter.
And I think everyone seems to be quite excited about Ollie O'Neill. I think the only thing that some Fulham fans were concerned about is what is his proper position, in quotation marks, you know. But one of the things I will say with Richie is Richie does like these utility players that can play all across the front line, and, you know, sometimes it works out better. I mean, Jack Ford is a perfect example of that. We signed him as a centre forward. He's now actually turned into a very, very effective right winger.
Yeah, Drinan and Soteria are the same, aren't they? They were probably forwards, and then we've sort of converted them a little bit as well. Yeah, I mean, I can only go by the clips I've seen online of Ollie O'Neill, but pretty much every time he's cutting in off the left onto his right and rifling one in. So that's kind of what I'm expecting in most games when he plays, to be honest. So,
and obviously we've had Adam Thompson has gone to Barnet. Terry, what do you make of that one?
I think it makes sense for the player, for the club. He's a decent player. I'm not sure about if he's robust enough to play or good enough to play at League One level. At that level, I think he can do okay. Once again, he needs games. It's been a bit of a theme tonight. You know, he struggled now for some time. If he gets a run of games under his belt, I can see him being a success there. But for me, makes sense all round for everyone that he moved down to the National.
I mean, my feelings are on it. I know Adam Thompson is a brilliant professional. You know, I don't think no one's going to question that. He's just been very, very unlucky with injuries since he's been at the club. I mean, you go back to when we very first signed him. He broke his ankle within the first, you know, what was it, the first 6 weeks, I think it was, of him being there. And it hasn't really got any better for him. He's never really got a run where he's been able to find form. Gareth?
No, I think that's exactly it, isn't it? I think he was a promising player and he looked really positive when he came in. But it was, where was it, in Grimsby when he broke his ankle? It was quite a long way away, wasn't it?
And it was he did it in a home game. I'm sure it was a home game.
I'm sure I saw a picture of him sitting there with his leg bandaged, and he was eating fish and chips. So maybe I've misremembered that, but he didn't. He never sort of got back from that, did he? He was always sort of around the squad when he was fit, but he never really played or anything, did he? You know, so I think it's just one of those. It's cruel luck, isn't it? It's like you know, he was going the right direction, and then it all came crashing down, really, didn't it? So.
Yeah, but we wish you the best of luck at Barnet, Adam. Obviously, we know you're out at the end of the season, so probably the last time we have seen Adam Thompson at the ground, which is a bit of a shame, but you're always welcome back to Brisbane Road anytime. Now, as is always the way in the January transfer window, there's been lots of rumours sort of circling around the club, the players and what have you. Ryan and Carlisle was a rumour that we've heard from various sources, which was off, and we don't know where we are now.
Well, that was Richie's interview, wasn't it, on Saturday? And we heard earlier he mentioned that I'm not overly happy because a player. So, we don't know for sure, but from what everyone reads on social media, and it looks like it was green and went up to Carlisle. A fee was agreed. He was out to train there for a few days, and they've now pulled out the deal, which. I don't know maybe they've seen what a lot of us have been seeing this season, or whether he's pulled up with another injury, but Richie didn't sound too pleased with it. And it's funny because obviously we've got Carlisle Saturday and Paul Simpson, mate, from Blackpool as well, isn't he? So I don't know if there's any issues there, or they'll have words or something. But yeah, I mean, I think that would have been, especially a fee for Aaron Drinan, in my opinion, would have been a very good deal. And I think he's probably on fairly decent money as well. They renewed his contract when Richie first came in. And I just think, quite hit the hole. I mean, I liked him under Jackie, actually, to players. And certainly when Richie first came in, I completely understood that contract renewal, because every game he was chasing, he was running, and he could finish. I think Bill, really, he contributed a lot to the promotion season. He's probably one of the only players I would say that about. And this season, I think...
He suffered with injuries.
Yeah, but even this season... supposedly he was getting, that run in an effort, for me, I felt like it stopped this season. So it felt like the right time. I mean, we've seen today Charlie Kelman's gone to Wigan on loan. I found them both very similar, actually, last year. The effort was always there, but it was something that wasn't. I liked, Charlie Kelman's a bit younger. I feel I can give him a bit more time. So I think there could still be something there. As in, he can develop as a player, but sometimes a player hits a thing, I think, where they need a start, they need a fresh start somewhere else, and I think with Drinan, I mean, he's part of the Orient song, isn't it, Richie's song, so he's ingrained in that. They've got to change the words for that now, but I think a move on is what player and club need, and it's disappointing for him, because Richie said in an interview, didn't he, I like to help the players out as much, as we've seen with Adam Thompson. Yeah. If they're not going to get a contract at the end of the season, they're better off getting one now, because there'll be thousands of players without at the end of the year. So it's unfortunate, because I think there's been a lot of players, and he probably could have got a bit more now, and Carlisle's far enough away that maybe it's been a good start for him, really.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels as though he's lost that explosiveness. That was one of the things that out of his game, when he played up front and he was chasing down everything, he had that explosive speed, and it seems as though the injuries have taken their toll. He doesn't trust his body to do that anymore, or he maybe just can't do that anymore. But again, he's another one that, look, there's a day left to go. Maybe we see some movement with Aaron or not. Either way, wishing the best of luck for the rest of the season. Like I say, these are just rumours. We will talk about them. We're not saying they're necessarily true. We're not saying they're from reliable sources. But Joe Piggott to Wimbledon.
It looked like it was going to happen, didn't it? It really did. And then we had these interesting rumours about who might be fit and who might not be fit. And apparently, from what I heard, it was off this group, so yeah, but from what I heard, he was basically out the door, and then there was an injury, and now he's not. Basically what I heard of it, but he's not really made any impact whatsoever. I think we said it earlier on, didn't we? He's not fitting in the way we're trying to fit, and I don't really see how he will.
Yeah, and again, I feel for him, because he's being asked to do something that he's just not physically capable of doing. You know, he can't run in behind, he hasn't got that pace. So I do feel for him. I do wonder, I mean, I've said before, I wonder what he would be like in the 10 if Ajay was up front and stretching the defences, giving him space to play in the 10, because I don't think he's back to goal, but I just don't think he suits the system. I don't think he's got the to suit what Richie wants to do. So, Terry, just to sort of close the show, sort of thing, what is it like for a player around this sort of time when, like, you might be at a club only have 6 months left or a year left, and possibly there's clubs coming in for you, and you might be looking out for a better deal. What's it like?
It can be unsettling. Football's far more intense now. I've got agents, everyone's got managers. I remember going back, to when I was playing, and we were training the day before a game, and Frank Clark called me over, called Greg Berry over. For Greg Berry or someone, and apparently Frank said, right, this had a bit of interest. Are you interested in going? Greg went, no, and that was that. And then he called me over, and I think there'd been interest from someone, and I went, no, I'm happy here. And that was it. It's so different now. Now, if we had representation,
yeah,
obviously everything would have to go and whatever. It's far more involved now, you know, and probably from a club's point of view, it's probably better the way it used to be, you know. And the sort of the rumour mill is far greater now because of social media. So there might have been interest in me or whoever played, and we would never get to know that. But now, as you see, we hear this, we hear that. Nearly every player seems to be involved one way or another in the transfer. So for a club, if you're a manager, it must be here now, because you're totally sure who's going to be coming in, who's going out. I mean, we just said, with a possible injury to someone in our team, that might be the reason that Joe Piggott is known. It's all connected. So, I could imagine tomorrow night when he'll have a little glass of wine or something.
Yeah.
But then he can start preparing properly, because until we know who's at the club, who's not at the club, he'll have a jet lag. Of course he will. But it's the same, and for players as well, if you're not sure, that's why it's good what he's done with Adam Thompson, as you just said. If they know early, they can go and sort their life out, because at the end of the day, it's their job. That's what they get paid for.
But it's about their families as well,
Of course. So it's a big thing, and I think Richie is handling it nobly, but very well indeed. It's a nice touch. Not every manager would do that.
And I think one of the other things, by signing Brandon Cooper, it does free up a loan space. So potentially, if it doesn't do any more business,
I think that's what we're looking at,
be a loan tomorrow, maybe. It'll be interesting. I think, possibly we could be looking at one more signing coming in tomorrow. So we'll just, we'll see what happens. But that in Richie we trust. You know, he's got us this far. You know, we're on a good run. And I actually think that one of the really positive things is he will develop younger players. And I think that's proven. So it'll be interesting to see if we can get a youngster off a Premier League club or a Championship club. You're looking to develop their game and go from there. Right, guys, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much for tonight.
Thank you.
And Rich, thank you for doing the buttons for us.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a good week. We'll see you Saturday.
Well, not a city, not a town. We're the only one of us in town. And you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer on those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're like an Orion from E10. Like an Orion from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing. We were formed in 1881, clans and all, and so and I we're like an omen from E10. Whatever challenge has come our way, the only faithful are here to stay. We will enter another day. An Orion from E10. An Orion from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. So you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again.
trying to do our best to cheer on those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient.